Welcome, one and all, to another edition of the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Hey, there I am. I, of course, am Greg G. Money Turner. I am one of the members of the Hawaii Film Critics Society and also the founder of the Nerdwatch podcast. But I'd like to present to you the man who is the founder of the Hawaii Film Critics Society, someone who I'd like to call a mentor, someone I'd like to call the professor of film, someone who's my cinema soulmate and my hetero life mate. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello, everybody, to Professor Barry Wurst. Professor Barry, how are you, sir?
Doing good, buddy. I don't know how that mentorship is going. I don't think you have ever come around on 007 Spectre. I don't think the mentorship is really kicking in.
Dang, I hate the last two James Bond films. I hate them. I don't know. I just can't stand them. Yeah, not my thing. But listen, this is not about Cary Fukunaga or Daniel Craig's terrible last two efforts at the James Bond franchise.
Terrible. Well, they're looking for the new guy right now. Do you have a pick? Who would you like to see as 007? Do you have a guy?
Well, got a few guys. I like that guy, Mark Madden.
Where do I know him from?
He is from, I believe, Game of Thrones, if I'm not mistaken. Oh. Okay. One of the things that... Here is the thing. All of these names have been batted around, right? As we know, of course, Idris Elba. Okay? Henry Cavill. Right? Yeah. Those are the two biggest names. I have to say this. Let me tell you the biggest problem with Henry Cavill and Idris Elba. Number one, Idris Elba is too big. Number one, I think his body type is too big. Number two, I think Henry Cavill is too big and too handsome. That's my problem. I don't think James Bond is supposed to be incredibly good looking. Okay? He's supposed to blend in. He's a spy. That's my issue. So I'm thinking somebody a little more, you know, who'd be great? Tom Hiddleston. If they gave him, you know, he's got that look about him. He's unassuming. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be able to pick him out of a crowd. I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, his face is buried under two big horns in the Avengers movies. Right. I mean, right. Yeah. So, anyway, listen. That's just me. I, what do you think? Do you have a favorite?
I hope they go with an unknown. I really do, because that's one of the things I liked about, you know, them going with Timothy Dalton and going with Daniel Craig. These guys were character actors. So
yes.
I hope that they go in that direction, because I mean the actors you named are all great. I mean, I'm insane. I would love Terry Crews to play James Bond. I mean, I want somebody who's like really, you know, just a total dark horse.
No pun intended. Now, the problem is with this, yeah, is that you would be literally rewriting what Ian Fleming's picture of what Bond looks like, right?
Well, with my Terry Crews pitch, yes.
Or even Idris Elba. Look at him. He's a good-looking buff dude.
But he has the swagger. He has a guy who enjoys wine and women, but is also a killing machine. I think he could convey that. I'm with you. I don't think Cavill is right at all. I'm also not a fan of Cavill, so I'm the wrong.
How dare you, sir?
That oh, man. Like, it's a surprise. You've heard me whine about Superman since, when was Man of Steel? 2013?
Yeah, that man is a treasure. All right? He's a treasure. All right? He's a good guy. He's a great actor. And he's a great Superman, even though it's been a bumpy road. I am one of the
mustache. I think the mustache really helped his acting. I gotta say, stick with the mustache.
It's quite possible. But listen, we are here from the Hawaii Film Critics Society. It is 2022. You know what's funny is that I just realized something. Give me 1 second, because I just think that I sound awful, and I don't know why. Give me a minute. Let me figure out what's going on here. My noise gate is on. My high-pass filter is good. My compressor is good. All right. I don't know. I think I sound... Maybe I haven't heard myself in a long time. Do I sound okay?
You sound fine to me, buddy.
All right. Fantastic. I was looking for fabulous, but I'll take fine. It is summer 2022. Hawaii Film Critics Society, unfortunately, we never had the opportunity to talk about pre-summer, which was springtime, which was, of course, award show time. The Oscars were uneventful for all the wrong reasons. It was eventful for all the wrong reasons. No need to bring up Will Smith or Chris Rock. That's not what we want to talk about. But from if we take that out, the Academy Award nominees were fairly good, but the award ceremony itself was fairly uneventful, minus, of course, the incident. Were there, really quick, before we get into summer 2022, were there any takeaways for you this year?
I think the Oscars, it's been the same thing as long as I've been alive. I think it's more of an honor not to be nominated, because I think you're in better company than the nominees. Because on the one hand, it is an honor to be nominated out of all the films that come out every year. It's so cool to be in that group.
Right.
But the thing is, that group is really everything. It's like you're the popular kids in school, and all the really cool kids are getting completely overlooked. I still can't believe that the movie Mass that came out last year didn't get anything.
I am outrageous. I am with you 1,000% on that. Outrageous. Yeah,
there's a lot of examples like that, but I'm with you. I think the nominees were good, but I don't think the winners were all that exciting. I think Coda is a good movie, but I wouldn't say Best Picture. I agree with you
100%.
There's a lot of that. I mean, you know, taking away the controversy, the enormous controversy of Will Smith at the Oscars this year, I don't think King Richard is his best performance. I think, in fact, he was so much better in The Pursuit of Happiness. He should have won for that film, in fact.
I agree. I personally don't think Will Smith is a Oscar-worthy performer.
As Muhammad Ali?
I liked Muhammad Ali, but no, I really don't. And that, I don't. The problem is that I've never watched a Will Smith film, and I've never seen him essentially fade into the background and disappear. I've never seen that before with him, and that's why I've always been not saying that he's a good actor. He's just not the actor that I will always see Will Smith. That's the problem. And you're right. King Richard was not a very good movie, number one. I think it was overly praised for some ridiculous reason. I think it has to do with the fact it was overly praised because I think that we all knew that Will Smith was going to get nominated for this movie. I would say that's a fair assessment, don't you?
I really feel like he's done great work. I really do.
Yeah.
The last 40 minutes aside, I thought he was extraordinary in I Am Legend. And I think that movie, the first 60 minutes of that movie are pretty incredible. I love the performance in Pursuit of Happiness, Ali, Six Degrees of Separation. I think he is a great dramatic actor. But I think King Richard is a stepping stone. I think his best work is probably ahead of him.
I would have to definitely disagree with you on that. I don't think he has much of a career after what happened. But that is neither here nor there. I have been wrong in the past, but I found out I was mistaken. So we'll see if he ends up having a career. I mean, all of his projects have been delayed, put off. There was going to be a Bad Boys 4, which, to be fair, I thought Bad Boys for Life was pushing it, and that was actually a very fun movie. And I was surprised. I don't think we need a Bad Boys 4. But, you know, I mean, no offense, because I like all the Bad Boys movies. I think they're a lot of fun to watch. I don't think we need another one. He had an Apple TV show, Emancipation, which got put on the back burner as well because of this whole issues. But overall, though, getting back to the point, do you think Do you think the Oscars, and this is going to dovetail right into the summers of 2022, do you think the Oscars were poor because basically we were getting out of the pandemic?
I don't think so.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
I don't. I mean, I think that was a problem last year because so much great stuff got pushed back. So much great stuff got delayed. We know that. So, but at the same time, it's also the Oscars are such a weird thing because it's really looking at the best of the best from the last 4 months of the year. That's the problem with the Academy Awards. It's mostly all the movies that are opening between September and December, which is insane because I think Silence of the Lambs is the last movie that won Best Picture that opened in February. Because, otherwise it tends to be everything, that's open, in November and December. So I think that's a problem. I think the Academy has tunnel vision for one thing. And the other thing is they're going with a lot of popular choices as opposed to the really interesting choices. And every once in a while, stuff breaks through. There was one example that I thought was really interesting. The Academy, they were the only ones to nominate Ethan Hawke for Best Supporting Actor for Training Day. I thought that was fascinating because Ethan Hawke is unquestionably great in that movie, but all the attention went to Denzel. And of course, Denzel won the Oscar. But the Oscars were the only ones to nominate Ethan Hawke for supporting actor. I thought that's terrific. They acknowledge and recognize that it was a two-hander. And even Denzel said as much in his Oscar speech. It rarely happens is my point. The Oscars tend to be like, okay, like this got all the love at Sundance, or this got all the love at Cannes. Correct. This got all the love, at this Critics Award. So it tends to be a lot of carryovers and you don't get a lot of, really nice dark horse surprises.
Do you see, we're talking too much about this, but I really, because we didn't have a chance to talk about it, because of the awards ceremony and things of that nature, and you were talking about winning those awards, do you see a way back for the Hollywood Foreign Press and for them to be impactful anymore?
Hard because, like, the Oscars, I really feel like it's more of an honor not to be in that company because those are the movies that people are going out of the way to discover. I really feel like having a cult following, having that kind of street cred means so much more than being an Oscar nominee, especially if the movies, you can't even see them. That was the crazy thing about Coda. Most people haven't even seen Coda
because
they don't have an Apple TV. That's insane.
I agree with that.
And, this Channing Tatum movie, Dog, which I haven't seen yet in all honesty, but like I've heard it's wonderful and charming. It did really, really well. I suspect had Coda opened up really wide, people would have found it. People would have embraced it. But the fact that Coda is, essentially on a website that not a lot of people have and a lot of people are not excited about, it's this strangely obscure movie. So it's really odd right now because
I agree.
It used to be that, you're up for an Academy Award or you're up for Best Picture. The box office of those movies tend to go up. This is a case where people, for one thing, they don't care about a lot of the nominees and they don't even know where to find a lot of these movies.
Right. Now, that is not going to be a problem this year. The pandemic is pretty much run its course for this summer for now. Okay? This is the first summer we've had in 2 years where the pandemic is not an issue. So this summer, what's interesting is that this is that we are on the we're starting up summer already. Of course, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness was the first movie of the summer, came out last week. We'll talk a little bit about that. But the ramp up to this was interesting. And, if I'm going off track, just tell me so we can get back on track. But I find it fascinating that this all started with Spider-Man No Way Home. Mm-hmm. We started to see people going back to the movie theater, right? In droves,
I will politely disagree with you. I think Godzilla versus Kong was the one that really brought us back. I do. That was March of last year.
No. What I'm getting at is that we never saw a box office as big as Spider-Man No Way Home since.
Sure.
That's what I'm talking about. And then we actually I'm not talking about the pandemic in and of itself because I agree with you about Godzilla versus Kong. But what I'm saying is that now all of a sudden the box office receipts were showing that people were going, right? And then all of a sudden That comes out. And then there's actually these very interesting... From that, there's actually these very interesting films that follow. We, like I said, the three biggest ones that come to mind, of course, are the unbearable weight of massive talent, The Northman, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it seemed like those movies came out in such a... I mean, and Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It seemed like all of these movies that you wouldn't think people would go out to see all of a sudden become box office hits, particularly in the case of Everything Everywhere All at Once. The Northman, for what it was, what was spent on that film, actually did fairly good. Unbearable, not a bad, it didn't, it, its take wasn't too bad. But are people, these films, and they're odd, like I said, in normal times, I don't think these movies would have been as you know, well received as they were. I think that, I feel as if this summer of 2022 is gonna, in my estimation, I was the man who said 2 years ago, just about a year and a half ago, that I said I was the man spelling gloom and doom for movie theaters. I thought it was over. Because there was no way that they were going to be able to, well, come to find out, you know, movie theaters were too big to fail. Go figure. But they stayed. What's interesting to me is that we are still, what's interesting is that even though we got Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, we have movies that are still getting delayed. I don't know why that is, but, and we'll talk about that a little later, but we have a slate of summer films that actually look like summer films. You understand what I mean? So in that respect, we got our first Marvel film of 2022. May 5th, we got Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. We'll go over the rest of them as we go along, but let's start with that one, and then we'll talk about what we're anticipating for summer 2022. What did you think, Professor Barry? Did you think that Doctor Strange was a good start for summer 2022? And do you think the box office receipts are reflecting that?
I see what you're saying about you, the Spider-Man analogy is perfect, because you're right. It's consistency. That's the thing. It's
right.
Like it's... It doesn't even matter what quality is. You're absolutely right. It's consistency. It's right. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, you're looking at the box office for the Nicolas Cage movie, love it or hate it. That movie's made as much money as it probably would ever make.
Correct.
So, yeah, it's starting to feel more normal. Right. Because last summer, A Quiet Place Part 2 was a blockbuster. Cruella was not. But we were seeing some... It was like there was some hesitation. There's some movies that people flock to like crazy, and there's other films that people said, you know, I'm just going to see them at home.
Right.
The HBO Max experiment was still going on where people could watch movies at home. So that was causing some hesitation and some confusion about where we could see these films and about. But yeah, you're right. I think there is more of a sense of if you want to see these movies, you got to see them on the big screen. So there is more of an immediacy. And you're right. There is a bit of a... some nice sleeper action going with some of these smaller movies. The Northman, as we know, is not going to make its budget back, at least not domestically, because of how much it costs. But people who've seen it are loving it, and that's really cool. That it is becoming a word-of-mouth hit, even if the box office doesn't reflect that. I don't know about Unbearable Weight, but as you know, I'm a huge fan of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that movie has become a monster sleeper hit, which is exciting because we haven't had – I mean, for one thing, I love the film, but – we also haven't had a movie like that in quite some time.
Yeah, and it is fascinating to me. Have you not seen Unbearable?
I have.
You did? You weren't a fan?
I like Unbearable, but I feel like it was, I don't know. I feel like it was kind of a restrained film. At its heart, it's a buddy film, which is really nice.
Yes.
And it does that very well.
Yes.
And Pedro and Nick and Cage were wonderful together. It's a good film, but I really wanted it to be crazier. It's actually one of the more, it's probably one of the more mainstream and normal films
it is
ever made.
Yes, I agree with you 100%, and I think that's why I liked it so much, because I thought it was going to go all in on the craziness of Nick Cage, but it didn't. It restrained itself, and I really appreciated that. And it became a film about loving film. And as ridiculous and as, I guess, self-reflecting and pompous and arrogant as that may be, it was still, I really enjoyed it. Let me give you my experience. I did 3 movies in 1 day. I saw that. I saw Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Right after that, I went to watch The Northman. And then after that, I went to see Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Crazy double feature.
Triple feature.
Wow.
I love the first 2 movies, and I hate everyone. I hate Everything Everywhere All at Once that everyone else loves. I thought that movie was overblown. I thought the praise for it is overblown. I thought the philosophical crap they decided to put in there was ridiculous. It didn't resonate with me. I thought that there was great parts to it, but overall, I thought it was trying to be bigger than it actually was, and I felt that that was more pompous than The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. So I don't hate the movie. I should bring that back. I don't hate Everything Everywhere All at Once. I thought it was being too pompous and arrogant for its own good. But like I said, I'm in the minority, so we'll just leave it at that. Now, off of all of these interesting films, the first very mainstream film that is very for summer, of course, because we got the Batman early in March, is another comic book film, and that's Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Now, let's do a little review on that really quick, and then we'll move on to some more movies for this summer. But I got to ask you this, Professor Barry, what do you think? Ever since the end, and this is how I feel. So maybe I'm reflecting what I feel onto you, and let me bounce it off of you and see what you think. Everything after Endgame, for me, I think Endgame was the big blow off, as it were, the wrestling term blow off. It was huge. It was gigantic, and it just kind of satiated all that was going on in the Marvel Universe. Every other movie since then, with possibly the exception of Spider-Man No Way Home, has been, at least for me, on the downward trend. They're not as impressive anymore. It's not. I'm excited to watch them, but I don't have the same excitement as I did. Now, with that in mind, for you, does Doctor Strange reverse that thought process? Because I don't know if you feel the same way as I do about the movies from the Eternals and the Morbiuses and all this other stuff that's been coming out. Do you think that Doctor Strange is turning a corner to maybe bringing us back to where we're excited about these movies again?
It's an odd thing, isn't it? Because we're talking about, even though it is a brand and it is a shared cinematic universe,
right,
it's always going to be hit and miss because it's different filmmakers, it's different writers, it's different artists in front of and behind the camera.
Yes.
So on the one hand, it's understandable why we demand everyone to be at a certain level, but they're all so tonally different. The quality is different, and I agree with you. It's hit and miss. For me, Shang-Chi was the top of the mountain, and I can't say I was a fan of the new Doctor Strange at all. I'm not. And
interesting.
I didn't feel anything watching it. Is the quick answer? I think the film is spectacular looking, and there are times, not enough, but there are times where I really felt the brilliance of the filmmaker Sam Raimi breaking through into the film. But for the most part, it felt very corporate. It felt very safe. I thought it sidestepped some of the really brilliant moments for a lot of stuff that is pretty routine and rote at this point. I'm not emotionally invested in Scarlet Witch. I was when I was watching WandaVision. I certainly wasn't in this film. And I thought it had a lot of kind of half there performances. I'm not saying that anybody gave a bad performance, but I can't say this was one of those Marvel movies that really engaged me beyond as a visual experience. And other than Shang-Chi, which is not only one of my favorite Marvel movies, but the only Marvel movie we've had so far with actually great action sequences, this is yet another film where I don't feel like the action sequences are very well staged. I feel like it's just a lot of visual chaos. You know, and some of these movies I think really deliver, but for me, this one did not.
I have to say that is your review of it is probably the worst I've heard, because I would have you either like it or not like it, but being indifferent to it's not good. Because it sounds like you're indifferent to it.
Yes, I don't care about it. Right. I don't.
Exactly.
And that's, I wanted to.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi's the man. I wanted to love it. I really do. But for me, this is another Spider-Man 3. It's a lot of spectacle. It's a lot of really sloppy storytelling. You've got a great cast, a lot of whom don't know what they're doing, or their characters don't serve the purpose that they should. There's a lot here that just does not work. And I think the fact that it's so visually spectacular is kind of a way of distracting us from the fact that it's a really unsteady movie. The first one had problems, but this one has much bigger problems.
You know what's funny? It's to me, I agree with you. I think I enjoyed it more than you did, but I do see it's as if Marvel doesn't know where it wants to go with this, and I agree with that 100%. Then again, we're wrong because the box office is, of course...
We are not wrong, Greg. Box office and quality are two different things. I refuse to give into that. Like, because, well, I mean, come on. Like, what are we supposed to say? Well, Spider-Man No Way Home was clearly the best film of 2021 because it made $700 million. No, absolutely not.
All right,
no.
Fair enough.
Box office and quality are not the same thing. Just because the masses eat something up, it doesn't mean that it's, you know...
Doesn't that make us pompous movie critics if we
No.
All right.
Fine. Absolutely not. I don't care how much Everything Everywhere All at Once makes. I think it's the best film of the year, and it may wind up being the best film of 2022, but I could care less if it makes $41 million or $41.
Wow, that's fascinating. All right. Well, listen, I may have to give Everything Everywhere All at Once again another shot just because the resounding reviews, because everybody seems to love it but me.
If the philosophical aspects of it troubled you, I mean, I should remind you that, you know, you and I are in love with the movie about, you know, this power called the Force, which apparently has...
How dare you?
Can be also explained by something called midichlorians, and we still love those movies. So
how dare you try and give me the Holy Star Wars as a reference to Everything Everywhere All at Once. That is not fair. All right, now, Professor Barry, we are on the precipice of what seems to be a fairly decent summer 2022. What can we look forward to this summer, and what are the hidden gems of 2022?
All right, well, I'll pull up the article that I submitted to Maui Times, and I've listed 13 of, I don't know why.
Will that be on the website, by the way, MauiTimes.com, or... Well, do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
They have been having this thing about sometimes it's only online, sometimes it's only published. Okay. I don't know. I'm all sorry. Right.
Sorry, I'm trying to get you clicks.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know what's going on over there.
Okay.
But in some way, form, it'll be in the next issue of Maui Time. Yeah. So, Doctor Strange is May 6th. This coming weekend, which is Friday the 13th. I don't know why I'm optimistic about this, but I am, because I like the novel. That's the new version of Stephen King's Firestarter, which stars Zac Efron. That'll be in theaters. I'm optimistic about it because it's from the director of The Vigil, which is a horror film that came out last year. You can find it on Hulu. Vigil is wonderful. It's the same filmmaker, Keith Thomas. But at the same time, in the trailer, they've been saying based on Stephen King's masterpiece. Anybody who knows Stephen King knows that is not true. No. Firestarter was never his masterpiece, not as a novel, certainly not as a movie. No. But I have high hopes for this one. I don't know why. The trailer is kind of middle of the road, but I'm hoping it's a good movie. And the fact that they're releasing it so soon in summer, I think, is a sign of confidence. So,
I think you're a High School Musical fan, so I think that's what it is.
High School Musical 3, absolutely.
Oh, 3, fair enough.
3 is the best one.
So
May 20th is another horror film. Surprise, surprise. You know, it's me. I love horror films. Men on May 20th. This is the new film from writer
Alex Garland. Alex Garland,
author of the novel The Beach, and of course the director and the writer. I believe he wrote them solely. I think Annihilation is an adaptation, and Ex Machina I think is all his. But Garland is a fascinating filmmaker and writer. His new film is, like his other two films, uncompromised. The word on the street is that it's incredibly shocking, bound to be divisive, and it's going to be one of those movies you have to see as soon as it opens because it may not resonate with the audience. It's going to be a very divisive film.
If it's as shocking as his work with Leonardo DiCaprio in The Beach, I'm in. Actually, seriously, maybe you can explain this to me. How is A24 still in business? These guys put out the most eclectic collection of movies. that I just don't know how they do it, but I am fascinated by every single attempt at a movie at A24. Of course, starting with Hereditary and Midsommar and Lamb, and for crying out loud, I thought The Northman, until I looked it up, I thought that was an A24 movie, but A24 seems to be putting out these interesting movies that just seem to captivate my imagination. And I don't know how, I don't know who funds this, I don't know how they manage to stay in business and make these movies, but I'm very excited to see, man. I've seen the trailer. I love that the trailer is so
vague. We don't know what
incredibly vague. Exactly. Incredibly vague. I'm cool with that. And I really like it. So they did Saint Maud, by the way, a movie that was a product of the pandemic. Never had the opportunity to come out. Matter of fact, I think it's on Hulu now.
It's great.
I encourage people to watch it. So if you like those kinds of films, I would completely agree with you. Men looks like an incredible film by Alex Garland. I'm very excited. That's his first work in a while, hasn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, first one since Annihilation, which didn't do very well. And it was a weird thing where some parts of the world got it only on Netflix. We got it in theaters.
Correct.
And it didn't really do well in either format, but I feel like it has a really strong cult following now.
Did you enjoy it?
I didn't enjoy it, but I'm fascinated by it. But I didn't enjoy it.
I'm with you, too. I'm actually with you on that as well. I'm with you.
Yeah, I saw it on the big screen, and I was so uncomfortable. I think around the scene where we get to Oscar Isaac's scene, I was fascinated, but also so disgusted. I may have to revisit it again, but that film was very off-putting for me.
Wow. What's next on that list of summer 2022, sir?
Well, a film that actually has appeared in two of my, I feel like it's an annual title now. This has been on two of my summer movie preview articles, and it just keeps popping up. And apparently we're finally going to get to see it on May 27th, which is Top Gun Maverick.
Thank the winged gods above.
Thank Goose.
Yeah, thank Goose. Because if there is one movie that I have been so excited to see, it is this movie. I'm sad that Tony Scott didn't have the opportunity to revisit this. I am very excited about this film, but I'm also very skeptical because the gentleman who directed it is an incredibly visual filmmaker. He did Oblivion. Oblivion, great visually, not exactly something, the story that blows you out of the water. He's also the guy that did Tron Legacy. I thought visually stunning. Story, not so much. What is your take on Top Gun Maverick? Has it been too long?
Well, it's definitely been too long. And if the movie succeeds, it will be able to connect with young people who did not grow up with Top Gun. That'll be the thing. If this movie actually connects with a young audience, and I suspect it will, the problem with it is that it is dealing, you know, primarily with younger characters who are becoming acquainted with the older characters. So it falls into that danger trap of Independence Day Resurgence. It could be that would be awful. But what I keep hearing, and the reason that everyone seems to think that this is going to be the biggest film of the summer, is that the aerial scenes are so remarkable, so sensational, so, you know, visceral, and you are there real, that the movie becomes that literal summer movie ride that people are going to want to take again and again and again. And if it delivers on that level, and to an extent that's exactly what the first film did, then it's probably going to clean up and do just fine. I don't know that the film is going to work as a drama because, you know, it is Top Gun. So like, as opposed to the story requirements, it's like, okay, so they're going to be a volleyball scene. Are they going to play Berlin?
It looks like it's going to be a volleyball scene. I'm so excited.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that this movie even exists, but I mean, if it can tonally match the bravado of the original, and the original is a visually extraordinary movie, the screenplay, not so much, but it is a visually rich film. If it can get to us emotionally and also work at the visual level, it's probably going to be the number one movie this summer, probably.
Here are my first indications of doubt. Number one, they released the first soundtrack single from the Top Gun Maverick soundtrack.
Yes.
And that was a Lady Gaga song. Not a fan, and I'm very disappointed they would choose her. Here's my question. Does anybody know if Kenny Loggins is busy? I'm pretty sure he would have come back and written some crazy great songs for Top Gun Maverick. Okay? Kenny Loggins is alive and well, and dare I say, a better songwriter and singer than Lady Gaga. That's number one. Number two, this is the other thing that worries me. We live in an age, we live in a very interesting age, politically and socially. Okay, Professor Barry?
Uh-huh.
The problem with this film that I think that I'm going to have is that the reason why Top Gun, the first Top Gun, was so good was the over-emasculation of everything in that movie, that it almost became homoerotic. Okay?
Almost. I would say
How dare you? Those were men. All right? How dare you? But my point is this, is that okay. I don't think can... In this day and age, it's hard to be as overtly masculine as Top Gun was touted to be. Am I losing my head here? I don't know.
We're also talking outside of the film because sure. Top Gun, because as is, it is a buddy film. As is, it is, a film about how the teacher and the students, take on a extracurricular relationship. It is a father-son story between Tom Skerritt's character and Tom Cruise's character. So there are a lot of archetypes going on in that film. In terms of, the film is very of its time, right? Because,
yes.
The movie looks like a military commercial. It always has.
Yes.
The movie looks like a Pepsi commercial. The film is very post-MTV. In fact, it's right around, MTV in its heyday,
right?
So rather than say hyper masculinity, for me the film is it's just it's so, there's no sense that you're watching anything that's real. The movie is such a movie,
right?
Everything is elevated.
Fair
it's,
enough. Exactly.
It's, if anything, this is going to sound like the highest of high praise, but no, it's such a cinematic movie. You never forget for a second that you're watching a movie.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But the thing is, Top Gun is so over the top that, you could watch it back to back with Star Wars and it's roughly the same experience,
Okay. That's fair. I am very excited for Top Gun Maverick. I have not been excited for a summer movie like this since Infinity War. So, yeah, I'm very excited for Top Gun Maverick. It's been a long time coming. It got delayed, twice?
Got delayed twice, but apparently they need the movie to make a ridiculous amount of money.
They do.
So they weren't going to dump it on Paramount Plus, and I'm glad. I love that. I know Tom Cruise could be a very controversial figure for a lot of people. He's always been one of my favorite actors as well as one of my favorite movie stars. I think his work as an actor is underrated, and I think his work as a movie star is pretty impressive. And this is him going all out. Nobody, of course, he's been pitched Top Gun 2 for decades. And he's turned it down because it is such an intrinsically ridiculous idea. And I agree with you. Without Tony Scott, you wonder is this going to work? I think they found the right guy. I think Joseph Kaczynski is he is the visual architect for a film like this, and it looks sensational. And
right.
This may sound like a backhanded compliment, but all the movie has to do is look sensational to work really well.
All right. Well, I'm with you 100%. I already bought my ticket.
You're ready to go.
I am ready to go.
You got the need.
I feel the need for Tom Cruise's speed. So I'm very excited. Now, Professor Barry, what is next on that list of summer movies?
Well, as if things couldn't stop getting interesting, we go from returning to 1986 to 1993 with Jurassic World Dominion opening up June 10th.
Now, Professor Barry, I come to you as they're saying that this is they're touting this as the final Jurassic film.
Sure it is. Yeah.
I was going to ask if you believe that.
No. If it makes as much money as Jurassic World, then no, we will be hearing about the next Jurassic trilogy within a couple months. No, there's no way. I'm sure everybody would be down to do another one.
Now here's what's at issue. I am I think that the last two, Fallen Kingdom and Jurassic World, in my estimation, were, for me, poor. I didn't like them.
I agree with you on the second one. I didn't like Forbidden Kingdom. I liked Jurassic World, but, you know, it's not special the way Jurassic Park is.
Absolutely.
And I know it's a weird way of saying it, but there's something about Jurassic Park. And I didn't think it was one of Spielberg's masterpieces the first time I saw it. But looking at it now, looking at that scene of those kids getting the T-Rex attack, mm-hmm. that's one of the great Spielberg scenes. There's so many moments in that first movie. I didn't recognize it in 1993, but looking at it now, it's not just a spectacular film. It really is a great, grand, and scary movie. And Jurassic World is not that. So I agree with you. There's something lacking in Jurassic World, but especially with Forbidden Kingdom, I really felt this is reheated leftovers.
Is it Forbidden Kingdom or is it, what is it?
Fallen Kingdom?
Fallen Kingdom. That's what
Sorry,
it is.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, Fallen Kingdom. Forbidden Kingdom. I think that's a Chinese
I honestly
film.
Don't even care.
Yeah. No, I'm with you because I didn't like either one of the new ones by Justin Trevorrow. Didn't like them at all. One was Justin Trevorrow or what is it? Is it Justin? I know it's Trevor. Colin Trevorrow.
Trevorrow.
And then the second one was J.A. Bayona, who directed that one. And then this one's going to be Colin again.
Yeah.
So here's my issue. I didn't like either one of them. I actually like Fallen Kingdom more than the first Jurassic World, if you can believe that. And that's only because after watching every single Jurassic Park film, I have never felt that anyone should get eaten more than that crybaby kid in the first one. That would not stop whining and would not stop crying about his parents and blah. I was like, dude, you're looking at dinosaurs, bro. Freaking get over it. All right. I wanted the T-Rex. I wanted him to be the bait when that thing from under the ocean came up, and I wanted that kid. I wanted them to take that kid down. He was the thing that took me completely off the movie. Was that kid? And then the second kid in Fallen Kingdom. Justice Smith, that's another one. I can't either. Both of those movies are not good. Not good. I hope that the return of Laura Dern and Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum, I hope they have a significant part in the film, is what I'm hoping. No disrespect to Chris Pratt. I love me some Chris Pratt. I even like me some Bryce Dallas Howard. I am not optimistic. But I already bought my ticket. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so there we go. So that's do you think that this is going to be successful?
I hope it works. I mean, I think it's going to make a gazillion dollars. I don't doubt that.
Okay.
In terms, I mean, I want the quality to be there. And I think the reason why I'm optimistic about this movie is it looks like it's going to start where the last movie ended. Because the last movie is really what I wanted the entire film to be, of this idea of dinosaurs in the 21st century. I want to see that juxtaposition. From what I've been told, apparently this new film, this is not a spoiler, it's in the trailer, there's scenes of dinosaurs in the snowy wilderness, something we haven't seen before.
Sure.
So I'm excited about that, because that was my favorite thing about The Lost World. I loved that scene of dinosaurs running around the mainland. I loved those sequences. And those are, I mean, that's the kind of monster movie stuff that I love as a kid. I love kaiju movies. So if this movie inches in that direction and actually makes us care about the imagery as opposed to just throws splashy dinosaurs at us, mm-hmm. then best case scenario, it's Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Boy, I hope it's as good as Ghostbusters Afterlife, because the only reason...
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it would be very nice. And the only reason, I think we forget, the only reason why Jurassic Park, the original, worked was because we actually cared about the characters and the peril that they were in.
That's, I agree with you. I believed in the dinosaurs because the actors did. They weren't just looking at CGI.
Bingo.
And isn't it weird that that film came out in 93 and somehow those effects still look good?
They still look incredible.
Still.
Incredible. Yeah. I can't even believe it. So a Jurassic World, what is this one called? Is it just...
Jurassic World Dominion.
Dominion. Yeah. Jurassic World Dominion. You can... The tickets are on sale now. For Jurassic World Dominion. All right, what's next for summer 2022?
The coming week, we have the new Pixar film, which is just called Lightyear.
Saw the trailer for that. Their Pixar's previous film, Disney was not confident in putting that to the theater, putting that in the theater. That was Turning Red?
Yes.
So this is the first Pixar film we've had in a bit, in the theater.
Disney released Encanto recently. You're right. They've been really going on and off. Luca was only on Disney Plus. It's been a weird dichotomy of like some here, some here. Yeah.
Yeah, Encanto was Disney Animation. What was the other one? Amaya and the Emerald Dragon or whatever that was?
Raya and the Last Dragon. Raya, that was good.
Yeah. That was a Disney animated film, not Pixar. So yes. Disney movies are hitting the theaters, but Pixar's Turning Red went straight to Disney Plus. A lot of controversy surrounding that film, and then
that might have been why. Maybe they were like, we don't want to deal with controversy. We'll just put it on Disney Plus. And I think they know if you put it on Disney Plus, even though it may find its audience eventually, unless you're Mandalorian, you know, it's not going to generate the kind of excitement that it normally would.
After seeing the trailer for Lightyear, I could not be less interested in what was put on screen.
I'm disappointed that Tim Allen's not a part of it. That's strange to me. It's not like he can't play younger. I don't think that's a problem that his voice is going to sound too old to play. Yeah. You know, what I'm interested in is that it looks like something different. I'm not a fan of Toy Story 4. I thought 3 was perfect. I thought 3 was a masterpiece. I thought 4 was just completely unnecessary. So I like that. I mean, of course, they're obviously going to go back to these characters. Of course, there's going to be a sequel or a prequel or a reboot or whatever. But I like that they're going for something different. I'm with you. I'm not excited about the film, but I'm interested just because they are trying something completely different, which I'll take that over Toy Story 5.
Fair enough. I guess my thing is that we're supposed to believe that the Lightyear toy is based on somebody who's real?
Yeah, and you know, another problem with that too, and I'm somebody who watches this film quite a bit with my little 6-year-old, is this film going to be better than the first 10 minutes of Toy Story 2? I seriously doubt it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that I felt nothing while I was sitting in the theater watching that trailer. I was just like, ugh. So yeah, I don't think that movie's going to be lighting the world on fire. So, you know, once again, I could be wrong. It could be making gangbusters worth of money. So we'll see. So what's next?
Well, because it's me, I'm dipping back into genre, which is The Black Phone, opening on June 24th. Oh, this is Scott Derrickson.
I'm so excited.
And you know what? Like, anybody listening to this going like, why are you talking about this movie? Well, remember, this movie was supposed to open in January.
Right.
And these guys saying like, no, this is a summer film.
Yep.
That's a huge bit of confidence. And you don't make a move like this unless you really believe in the horse that you're putting in the race.
I remember that the release date for The Black Phone was going to be mid-February. That's the release date that we got here. It was mid-February. Yeah. Scott Derrickson, as you know, is the man who left Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness due to creative differences, and he made this instead. So Scott Derrickson, number one, I think is a underrated filmmaker. He has an eye for horror films, and Black Phone stars Ethan Hawke, and I think that Black Phone is going to be a sleeper hit of the summer. So I'm very excited for it.
I didn't realize it was based on a Joe Hill story. So that's also a great pedigree. I mean, you know, a good horror movie during the summertime, you know, certainly I'm assuming Men is going to open strong and then drop just because apparently it's so divisive and so horrifying. But a good horror film that gets everyone together, screaming together, talking together, really intrigued. I mean, I don't think The Black Phone is going to be The Sixth Sense, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the distance because apparently the movie really does deliver.
Well, I'm very excited. Black Phone will be hitting theaters when again? June?
That's June 24th.
June 24th. Seek it out. I certainly hope it comes to the islands. If they have that much confidence in it, we don't have to wait like we did for Everything Everywhere All at Once or any of these smaller films. I hope this one's big. And I hope we get a day and day of release. That'd be very exciting. All right, yeah. Black Phone. The Black Phone, of course, before I forget, do we have a synopsis of where that movie's going?
In terms of what the movie's about?
Yes.
It is about a young man who is chained into the basement of a serial killer's home. and the serial killer is played by Ethan Hawke. And in the basement, there is a telephone, and the young man is able to use the telephone to talk to the serial killer's former victims. And the question is the phone real? Is it not real? Is there really a supernatural telephone in this serial killer's basement? So it's a bit of a puzzle.
Well, tell you what, I think it's exciting. I'm very excited to see it, and I am a huge fan of Ethan Hawke. I like the films that he does. I like the films that he ends up picking, because he doesn't very often pick mainstream movies, mainstream films. I mean, it was shocking to see that he's on a Disney Plus show like Moon Knight. That was a shock to me. So, I mean, I really enjoy Ethan Hawke's work, and I'm very excited for Black Phone. Next, I think we're hitting July, aren't we?
No, we got a movie coming out the same day as Black Phone. Whoa. And I'm really not looking forward to this one, but I would be an idiot not to mention it because people are going to be talking about it, and that is Elvis, Baz Luhrmann's Elvis film.
Oh, I have seen that trailer so many times.
So many times.
Can I tell you something? I cannot wait to see it.
Really?
I am very excited to see it. I think Baz Luhrmann's eye for musicals or films based on music is second to none. I think Baz has captured the spirit, the magic of who Elvis was in those trailers. I hope he does the same for the movie, because I am incredibly excited to see it. The gentleman who is playing Elvis is goodness. It seems like he falls right into the character because he looks like the spitting image of Elvis. And I am... I'm very excited for it, and I like Baz Luhrmann's work, so I'm surprised you're.
I think it looks ridiculous. I really do.
That's the whole point, because Elvis is ridiculous.
Elvis was ridiculous. I love Luhrmann. I do. I'm with you. I think Luhrmann is an artist. I think Tom Hanks looks like it's a self-parody performance.
It does. I agree with
so
that.
Distracting. Just get a character actor. You don't need Hanks. And this is the film apparently he did while he was stricken with COVID. So I want to give the film a shot because it's Luhrmann and because Hanks is terrific. But I mean, I'm sick of these jukebox bio musicals. I wasn't the biggest fan of Bohemian Rhapsody, and I couldn't stand Rocket Man. I mean, these movies it has nothing to do with how I feel about Elton John, you know, or Freddie Mercury, in this case, Elvis Presley. But I mean, these movies are going to be hits no matter what because everybody knows the songs walking in. But it looks so romanticized, so ridiculous. I'm not looking forward to this one.
But here's the thing: is that Bohemian Rhapsody was doomed at the start anyway because of the director issues that were involved. Right. I mean, it was passed off from Bryan Singer to Dexter Fletcher, so we knew that was going to be a troubled production as anyway. But I dare I say this? I think rock and roll movies don't work unless they are romanticized. And that's just me. That's why I actually enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody. Rocket Man was actually definitely romanticized, and I thought it was very enjoyable. I think just as anything else, you know, it's that old saying, if you're deciding whether to print the truth or the legend, print the legend. And I think that in the case of people that are in rock and roll, I think that that's what you're supposed to do. And so I'm very excited about it. I think that I think that Baz has a good eye for that. And like I said, I like those. I like Get On Up. I thought Get On Up was not bad. You know, the one about James Brown.
James Brown movie. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I'm excited. My only reservation about the Elvis movie is this. Is it coming out at the wrong time? And I don't mean its date or the year.
You're talking about post-Me Too movement? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
And not just that, but I mean in the era in which we live, is it, like I said, social climate is what I'm talking about. Is this the right time to be pushing an Elvis film?
There's nothing politically correct about Elvis.
Right.
There's nothing politically correct about his music,
right,
the history of his music, his movies, his relationships. Right. Elvis might be among the most problematic popular artists of the 20th century. If the movie is smart, And I don't think it is. But if the movie is smart, it will deal with that. But I doubt it. I think we're going to get a lot of, I mean, like, this, I mean, I'm with you. I've seen the trailer so many times. I mean, the scenes of little young Elvis in, you know, in the
revival tent.
The revival tent around African-American preachers. Apparently that's going to excuse so much, but whatever, Baz Luhrmann, whatever. We love the music. We'll buy the soundtrack.
Do not disparage the good name of Elvis Presley, Professor Barry. So Elvis hitting the theaters the same day. Wow. Yes. I'm excited for it. I'm here for it, doggone it. I am here for it. All right, what's next on that list?
Wise men. if you're 8 years old or younger, then July 1st, Minions 2, The Rise of Gru.
Do you think that series of films has reached its zenith?
Absolutely. I don't think there's a need for these movies. And I thought the first Minions, just Minions by itself, I thought it was a really bad film and really forced. I don't think the filmmakers understand or appreciate that those characters are best in very small doses. They don't deserve their own film. It helps that Steve Carell's character is back and is the center point of this film and doesn't just have a cameo. Nevertheless, I've never found Gru to be one of Steve Carell's great characters. I think this movie is going to be must-see for some, but I mean, for me, it's like if they do another Trolls, which of course they will. I don't think not every animated film is great. I'm not expecting this one to be.
Great. Do you want to go over what it's about? No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to. So The Rise of Gru, and that is that's July, correct?
July 1st.
July 1st. Okay. I'll make sure to cross off my calendar and not attend the movie theater. Anyway, what else is coming out?
It's back home again.
Yeah.
let's see. On July the 8th, a film that many think is going to be the biggest hit of the summer, which of course is Thor.
Thor, Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder, yes.
I think it's going to be a huge hit, but I think the trailer is awful. What I saw from the trailer is awful. I think that Taika Waititi's take on Thor is terrible. I am not a fan. I was not a fan of Thor Ragnarok. I love everything that Taika Waititi does that is not in the Marvel Universe. And Thor Love and Thunder seems like it's going to reaffirm my dislike for his work in the Marvel Universe, because Love and Thunder does not look good at all. I hate to say this. I think, though, it's going to make a ton of money. Because everybody, I'm in the minority here. Everyone loved Thor Ragnarok, and right. I just hated it. I thought it was too goofy. I don't think Taika understood the humor from Thor doesn't come from Thor himself. It comes from him taking himself so seriously. That is what makes Thor such a great character. Because everyone around him thinks he's a joke because he's so serious. And that's where the humor for me comes from. So this just looks like, I don't know, and the Guardians looks like they're just thrown in there, like, you know, I mean, they set it up in Endgame, but they feel like they're just thrown in there, and I don't have high hopes. I don't think Natalie Portman is going to save this movie by any stretch. So I don't know how you feel, but please pontificate on how much you're going to enjoy Thor Love and Thunder.
No, I'm with you on this one. I haven't cared about this character since he was played by Vincent D'Onofrio. I don't care about Thor. I really don't. I don't like the character. I've never been a big fan of Thor, and I definitely didn't like the first two films. Ragnarok was interesting just because it was so different, but I really feel like that was one and done. I think going in that direction, making this a really jokey comedy, I think there's a big difference between making something that's a really, irreverent and enjoyable comedy and something that's just really smug. And this looks like a really smug, self-satisfied movie.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of fans, that will be enough. But, I mean, I what can I say? I have a hard time loving a movie that loves itself so much. I think that's already established.
Right.
I hope the movie is better than the trailer. That would be nice. But no, I'm with you. It doesn't look good. It looks very tired. It doesn't look like anything we haven't already seen before. If you know, if bringing back Natalie Portman is a stroke of genius, that would be great. And she's a fantastic actress, but this looks like another case where, I mean, she's been so misused by this franchise already. I'm surprised she, I hope they give her something to do is what I'm trying to say.
Well, she's Lady Thor. So, I mean, what, why would you not come back?
Well, you know, when Scarlett Johansson came back for to finally do this Black Widow film and all the controversy that came out, I really felt like that movie is not perfect, but I thought Scarlett Johansson actually had a lot to do, had a lot to
play. I liked it. I really enjoyed
it. And, you know, and I think in a way, it made up for the fact that, I mean, there have been too many Marvel films where she's just standing in the background as eye candy, you know, and that's ridiculous. This is a real actress who deserves so much more than to just stand around and provide exposition. So I'm really hoping that Portman has that kind of deluxe treatment. I hope that she's actually given a real role. It would be great if this was like a comeback performance for her, but I mean, it's a Thor sequel, so I don't know.
Well, would you like to tell us what the story is there for Thor Love and Thunder? Or how they touted it?
Well, this is the riveting plot description I wrote for my article in Maui Time. I wrote Chris Hemsworth's
Worms. Let's try that again. How dare you?
That was my mistake. Yeah. Let's try that again. So Chris, my description, one sentence is Chris Hemsworth's tired character with the hammer is back yet again.
Wow. Wow.
That's my plot description.
Jeez, Louise. That's very harsh. Not looking forward to Thor Love and Thunder, but I will end up watching it. So we'll see how that goes. Now, moving on. What else is on there?
Well, this is the one, not to bury the lead, but this is the one I'm looking forward to the most. This is the movie I've been so excited about. Opening July 22nd, Jordan Peele's Nope.
Jordan Peele's Nope is the most fascinating film, that I've seen the trailer for in a while. It is, I am intrigued by it. And if Get Out and Us are any indication, I hope we're in for a ride.
I hope you're right, too. I get a lot of Signs vibes from this trailer.
Yes.
And it's interesting that Signs was, even though it was not technically his third film, but, you know, Signs came after The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. So now, and this is like the third Jordan Peele horror film. So it's interesting that he's like on the trajectory of Shyamalan in a lot of ways, which means that in a few years we're going to get, you know, Jordan Peele's Lady in the Water. Apparently that's right around the corner. But for now, let's enjoy it while he's on top of the hill. I would be interested, like, I'm interested in what, if there's any subtext, because obviously with, especially with Get Out and maybe less so or in a different way with Us, this looks like a straightforward alien invasion film, or is it? That's what interests me. Like, if this movie is not even about aliens. So I'm interested if he's going to go in a very, you know, he avoids the obvious at every turn. So I wonder if he's once again baiting us for something that we're not ready for.
I agree. And I think that I think the trailer did a good job of selling enough and not giving us too much. So that's the intriguing part of it. So Nope. Jordan Peele is coming off of the success of course, like we said, Us and Get Out. He was not very successful with his, he didn't do the whole series, but Twilight Zone was not something that, his revival of the Twilight Zone is something that did not go well. And after watching it, I can see why. So hopefully he stays away from that and sticks to what he knows best. And Us and Get Out are what he should be sticking to as far as that genre and that the mystery that's involved. So I'm very excited for Nope. And that's July what?
July 22nd.
July 22nd. Wow, right near the end of summer. Jeez Louise. I they're holding that for quite some time.
Yeah.
Wow. What else is big?
Well, then the last two films that I have on my list, of course, there's others, but these are the last two films of the summer season before we inch into the fall season, both opening the same day. One is Bullet Train, opening July 29th.
Now, that seems to be on every print. That trailer's on every print of every movie that I have seen. It's directed by the gentleman who directed
Deadpool 2,
and John Wick 3, if I'm not mistaken. Is that him?
Okay.
What's his name? So. I can't. For the life of me, I can't. David?
Tim Leach, is that his name?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's not like we're professional film critics,
right?
Anything.
I mean, geez, just because we're professional film critics doesn't mean we have to know how to pronounce his name. I mean, seriously. Bullet Train. Is this just Brad Pitt being John Wick in his own movie?
Well, in this film directed by David Leitch,
it is. Thank you.
I think Pitt has been looking for a franchise for a while. We know that at one point he was going to replace Cruise.
Right.
Cruise was going to be written out of Mission Impossible, and he was actually going to jump on and take that franchise on the fourth film, and that thankfully they went in a different direction. But World War Z was supposed to be his franchise, and even though there was a long period where World War Z 2 was being developed with him and David Fincher, that never happened. So I think Pitt is understandably looking for a franchise to call his own, and this is the latest attempt at that. And I don't know. It's a mixture of action and comedy, which is great, but it is coming really late in the game. And sometimes, you know, when you get this late in the summer and we're just kind of, you know, bleary eyed from all the explosions and spectacles, it may be a little too much too late. This might have been a movie that I think would have done so much better had it opened in May. But I mean, this is a back to school film.
Right. Now, to be fair, I don't know what curve you're grading on, but I say that the end of summer is the end of August. Would that be fair?
Yes, although we've had this argument before. I do remember a couple of years ago you telling me that the summer season began with the Fast and Furious movie.
And that was in April.
In April?
April. All right. We moved up. They moved the calendar up.
They haven't even had prom yet, and you're like, it's summertime because it's Fast and Furious.
Well, let's be fair. August is kind of the cutoff for summer in my estimation. I will say that May is where summer starts, but anytime a Fast and the Furious sequel is put on, I think that's when summer starts. So
I understand your logic.
Yeah,
I do.
So are you excited about Bullet Train at all? Do you think obviously it's a comedy. It's not serious like John Wick. Do you think it's something that people would be looking forward to?
It looks interesting. I mean, I like that it's ultra violent and that it's grown up. I love it. It has a really eclectic cast.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm honestly even starting to feel a little burnt out. I felt a little burnt out by John Wick after the third film. I thought the second film was a masterpiece. I think John Wick Chapter 2 is one of the best action movies, period. And by the third film, I was really feeling like, look, either kill this guy or not, but like, don't just keep dragging this on and on. But of course, we got John Wick 4 coming up. I'm feeling that way about Bullet Train. If it's great, great. I mean, I would love for the film to be a great comedy over being a great action movie. I feel like that's the harder thing to achieve, that if it could actually balance that action, you know, if it scratched that action comedy itch.
Now, with Bullet Train, of course, it is, I didn't know this, but it's actually based on a Japanese novel. I had no idea. So that's fascinating to me. What else is coming out in July?
The last film that I have on my list is the film that opens on July 29th, same day. And this is a family film I'm actually really looking forward to. This is DC League of Super Pets.
Ugh.
Really? No?
Ugh.
What
not,
reaction?
Not into it. Not into it at all. I saw the preview for it. I know it's about the Super Pets. I know it's about Crypto and Bat Dog and all this other stuff. Just not... I'm not... I don't know. I'm just it doesn't float my boat. So we'll see.
Four words, okay? Keanu Reeves is Batman.
Keanu Reeves is Batman. That is very true.
Yeah.
That is a good point. So we'll see. I wasn't excited after seeing the trailer. I'm not a fan of the animation. I don't think the animation looks that great either. That's the other thing.
I love the idea more than the animation.
Right. I agree with that. So DC, this is, I think this is the only DC movie that we're getting for, I think might be for the year, isn't it? No. I think we are getting.
Well, I mean, as of press time, apparently they're going to, you know,
they delayed,
they're not going to shoot any of their current films.
Correct.
Despite some people in the cast.
Correct. They delayed Black Adam.
Yeah.
That got delayed again. I don't know if the Flash film is coming out by the end of this year. I'm not too sure. With all the troubles with Ezra Miller, I don't know what's going on with that. It might be the only DC movie that comes out this year, because they delayed Aquaman 2. And that was before that was way before the Amber Heard controversy and the trial and all of this stuff. So they delayed that till next year as well. So this may be it. This may be the only one we're getting. So, and then with the merger happening and Discovery kind of restructuring the way DC is, my estimation is this may spell doom for DC. So, I don't know. We'll see. Now, does your list only go up to July?
That's where my cutoff point was. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what. There is another film that I wanted to not recommend, but I'm curious about.
Yeah.
And that's only because it comes out August 5th. And it is the first, I think, in some respects, the first mainstream Filipino family comedy that is actually starring Joe Coy called Easter Sunday. That comes out August 5th. Here's my only problem. And dare I say this, I think the director may have doomed this movie. The director is Chandrasekhar, I believe. I can't remember his name. He's the man responsible for Broken Lizard, Super Troopers, Dukes of Hazzard, Beer Fest.
Okay.
I have my reservations about this now. I hope it's good for Joe Coy's sake, because I think he's a very funny stand-up comedian. Yeah. To be fair, I don't drink alcohol, but I think Beer Fest is hilarious. All right, I'm just gonna put that out there now. But
I agree.
Dukes of Hazzard stinks. That was horrible. Club Dread was not good. Yeah. Super Troopers 1 was fairly passable. Super Troopers 2 was a nothing burger. So his track record isn't great. But dare I say this, he probably comes cheap. Hopefully it's good. I don't know how you feel about Joe Coy, but this is an interesting film just because it is, it's actually produced by Steven Spielberg. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. That's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy. Matter of fact, Joe Coy actually spoke to him, I guess. And yeah, so now he's, I think it's for DreamWorks. So we'll see. It's interesting. We've never seen a mainstream Filipino film before. So I'm surprised that a movie called Easter Sunday didn't come out Easter of this year. But
yeah,
whatever. So yeah,
that would have made more sense. I'm with you. I like Joe Coy a lot. I thought the trailer was really promising. It does look like a film we have not seen before. There's a movie that came out a couple months ago. Actually, it's been a month, and it was only in limited release. The film is called Islands. It was a Canadian film about a Filipino family, and it was fantastic. It's one of the best films of 2022. I love this film. Very powerful, very real, very wrenching, very raw. And if anything, it just reminded me, like, yeah, there's really – we always see a market for this. As you know, at our Queen Kaahumanu Theater, they would often show different Filipino films of different genres. They would have thrillers and comedies and musicals. But in terms of a Filipino film that actually has major mainstream crossover, that actually, you know, depicts that could hopefully depict Filipino people in a way that's authentic, and actually has, you know, Joe Coy, it's a lot of pressure on him, obviously. He's never carried a film before. In fact, I think, is this his film debut?
I think you're correct that it is a film debut.
And you know, in my favorite, one of my absolute all-time favorites, Tia Carrera is in it, so I'll see anything that she's in blindly. But I'm high hopes for this one, because it does look really funny. He looks like he could absolutely carry it, and there aren't enough comedies out this year.
Yeah, and you should know already, Professor Barry, Asian movies only go mainstream where they're either martial arts or comedies. Okay? That's it.
It's unfortunate, isn't it? Yeah, it's unfortunate, because, I mean, even like, if you look at, not to get too crazy about this, but like John Woo, I mean, the guy, he's made musicals too. Like, you know, action is not the only thing that defines John Woo, even though John Woo is one of the definitive action filmmakers. So yeah, I welcome films that, you know, not only that are off the beaten track in terms of being mainstream, but are actually going to show us a culture, show us people, show us life experiences that are completely new with the multiplex.
Aren't you the same guy that hates Crazy Rich Asians?
Asians with a passion.
Okay.
And I keep getting threatened with the number two and number three are going to be shot from court back to back, and there's going to be even crazier Rich Asians. Yeah, I can't stand that.
All right.
And I applaud. You know, I'm glad it was a hit. That's fantastic. And there's a lot of wonderful, talented people in it, but no. And I was appalled that everybody compared it to the Joy Luck Club. Like, the Joy Luck Club by Wayne Wang is a masterpiece. Crazy Rich Asians is a very expensive sitcom.
Everybody, no one went to go see that movie, but it gets incredible praise. Joy Luck Club. I don't remember anybody seeing that movie.
No, yeah, I saw it. And my mom saw it, and that's about it. Yeah,
yeah.
I love, but it's one of my favorite movies. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. Another good one.
Great film. Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. Yeah,
but no one remembers it because it's a drama. Well, even it's comedic, but it's a drama. Those movies don't have the same. Hey, 2022 is a perfect example. Anybody remember Drive My Car? Mm. Anybody see it? It's an incredible movie, but nobody's watched it. So,
I think the running time scared people off. They all went to the Batman, but they didn't go to Drive My Car.
Well, Professor Barry. Summer 2022, after listening to your list of films and after perusing my own, I guess I was wrong. I thought that there'd be much more movies, much more impressive films, but there isn't. There's only a few that I think that it will get people out to the movies. I think.
Let me throw one more sleeper, because you threw one in there. You threw in the Joel Coy film. Let me throw in one movie that I'm really excited about.
All right,
But the thing is, like, I didn't put it on the list because I'm like, is this going to open on Maui? Crimes of the Future, the new
David Cronenberg. You know what I like about it? Let me tell you what I like about it after seeing the trailer. Number one, it's David Cronenberg, so he's awesome. But number two, I think it was him that said there will be people that walk out of this movie.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. That's the kind of filmmaker I like. He says, you know what? There are going to be people that watch this movie and just walk out. Like,
there are filmmakers who want to hold our hand, and then there's David Cronenberg.
Then there's David Cronenberg. And he has a muse in Viggo Mortensen, apparently. That's his guy. So after seeing that trailer, I am incredibly intrigued.
It looks disgusting, and that's probably going to be a problem for a lot of people. And
oh, yeah.
If it does come to Maui, we all got to, like, rush to see it, because you know it's not going to make a week. But I can't wait. Cronenberg. I'll see if he does.
Do you have a bit of a synopsis in there for people that are...
It takes place in the not-too-distant future, and it's a world where body alteration is a pastime.
Yes.
And Viggo Mortensen is playing a performance artist, if you will, who is famous for all the different ways that his body has been physically altered for his enjoyment and our enjoyment. So the film is really, it's a body horror film, but it's also about the possibilities of the human experience as we experience it, and how we change, how changing our body can change our perspective on the world.
Hey,
so
hey,
obviously,
hey, don't get into psychological analysis until after we see the film, Professor Barry.
Okay, so it's a really gross movie with a lot of gore and naked people in it. Viggo Mortensen's the star. So there you go.
There it is.
Buy your ticket. Immediately.
That's much better. I find the title fascinating. You know, that's for me. David Cronenberg's filmography is just incredibly eclectic. I mean, it's him and David Lynch, even though incredibly different filmmakers, but they seem to, those two filmmakers seem to evoke the same emotions in people that watch their films.
Yeah.
So, I'm very excited for it. And, I think that, if you guys have not seen A History of Violence or Eastern Promises, maybe it's time to catch up and to give those a shot before you see Crimes of the Future. Because those are two of his most recent films that I think are considered quote unquote mainstream. in some respects.
Yes, and I'm with you. I mean, Viggo Mortensen goes to places in Eastern Promises that are just incredible. That's a performance that should have won an Academy Award.
Agreed.
He's incredible in that movie.
Agreed, 100%. So that's your sleeper, possibly.
Yeah.
All right, that's your sleeper possible.
If it ever comes here, yes.
All right, I'm in. Well, hopefully, if it doesn't come here, it'll be immediately available on video on demand.
There you go.
That should be fantastic. So, Professor Barry, before we get out of here, I know that the Hawaii Film Critics Society will be doing the same thing in the fall. We'll be having a preview of fall movies. Fall movies, of course, are award season films. But since we're here, is there anything right now that either movie or television that has captured your imagination or that you'd recommend that you haven't had a chance to really talk about?
Interesting. So, like, movies that are currently playing, you mean?
Currently playing, or anything right now that you have that we haven't had an opportunity to talk about at all. Do you think there's anything, I mean, for, like I said, anything at home that's streaming or anything that's in the movie theaters that we haven't had the opportunity to see? And like I said, something that got you excited.
Okay. Well, you know what? Since I went all hoity toity and talked about Cronenberg, I'll go in the total opposite direction and talk about popcorn nonsense. I'm one of the five people on planet Earth who had a lot of fun with Morbius. Morbius is not a great film. And I will not claim it to be a great film, but I had so much fun with Morbius. I did.
Wow. I can't believe you and like five other people.
One of the most loathed films of the year. It's been completely dismissed. In the box office, everyone is equating with quality. The film clearly suffered from too many
cooks
edits.
In the kitchen.
Way too many. But there's great scenes in it. I really enjoyed Jared Leto and Matt Smith's performances. There's scenes that I really enjoyed. I think it's closer to being the Marvel horror film that we all want, more so than Multiverse of Madness. There's great stuff in Morbius, but I think it's a good film as opposed to a great movie because there's too much. And I think everybody really just hates that stinger at the end. And I agree. The stinger at the end is awful.
So here's the thing. I may interject.
Yeah.
I was reading an article that said that now Prince of Morbius and this spoiler, by the way, so just be prepared. If you haven't watched the film, spoiler for the next 30 seconds, just listen up. So I'm starting now. According to reports that I have read, that the stinger with Vulture has been changed.
Really?
They actually took out the verbiage of Spider-Man out.
Wow.
Yeah. So that has been taken out, and they've excised that from the stinger at the end to separate him from Morbius, to separate Spider-Man from Morbius. So that's not so you may have seen something special, but now apparently from what I have read, the prints have taken out Spider-Man.
Fascinating.
Is it that bad? I mean,
it's a stinker, and it's a shame because, you know, we look forward to these scenes, and I think that might have affected the exit polls because, you know, like when you read those cinema scores, this movie got a B+ or an A-.
Right.
I think one of the reasons that the scores for Morbius were so low is because that final scene is so grown worthy. It's poorly staged, it's poorly written, it's really forced, and it's weird because there's a version of it in one of the early trailers that looks really good too. So I think they dropped the ball in terms of how to incorporate it into the larger universe. Wow. But the film by itself, I think, is a lot of fun.
Cool. Let me give you a couple. Okay.
Okay.
If you can think of any while I'm speaking, please let me know. Let me give you a couple, but I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to talk about something that got a lot of praise, but I thought sucked. I had the displeasure of watching Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock in The Lost City. Don't bother. I would rather be lost in the jungle by myself than with those two. It is not good. If I'm fair, I will say the things at work are Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock. Whenever they're together, it works. What doesn't work is Daniel Radcliffe. They should have, if they were going to crib from romancing the stone, they should have just cribbed from Romancing the Stone, and they should have literally taken that same story and done it, because what they did here was not good. Apparently, it's got like a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if that's a critic score or whatever. I don't get it. So I ended up watching The Lost City, and I was incredibly disappointed because I thought it was going to be enjoyable. Channing Tatum, for some reason, is not the greatest actor, right? But he's bad here. Like, bad. He's bad. Thank God he's got Magic Mike XXXL coming out. But yeah, I watched The Lost City and I was incredibly disappointed. I thought it was going to be, you know, we haven't seen this good Sandra Bullock movie in a while, you know, so I thought maybe that would have been the case, but unfortunately it was not. So I definitely want to say that you may want to skip The Lost City. Even, you know, we haven't had, and to be honest, Professor Barry, we haven't had a lot of good romantic comedies as of late.
Yeah.
Let me just say that The Lost City continues that trend. sorry, it does. And I, a lot of people believe that that's a dead genre. That's just not the genre that people are, romantic comedies are not the thing anymore. When Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson were making movies, that's when it, you know, that was in its heyday, right? Kate Hudson, you know, how to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and Fool's Gold. By the way, I like Fool's Gold. That's a stupid movie, but I like it. That's a better Romancing the Stone ripoff than this was. So, yeah, I would say to avoid that at all costs. But there is another film that I would say that is on the same level as Morbius, but actually a little better. One that I do recommend for it being absolutely in tone with the movies that this gentleman consistently makes, and that's Roland Emmerich, and that's Moonfall. If you have not seen it yet, you should do yourself a favor and check it out. Because those trailers, when they first came out, remember how good they were and how intriguing it was? I want you to forget those movie trailers. Okay. Forget them.
Okay.
All right. And just go inside and think of Independence Day. That's all I want you to do. And 2012. That's it. That's it. It's fantastic. It is so much fun. It is so stupid. This is what Roland Emmerich is good at. Huge spectacle. Story, not so much. But it's the spectacle and the ridiculousness of the script that makes it work. So, it's a glasses half full kind of thing. So, I do recommend that. So, if you have the opportunity, check it out. Moonfall is currently available. And you should definitely not miss it. So that's what I think. So anyway, yeah, those are ones that I recommend highly. I do recommend, like I said earlier in the show, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I really like that. I do recommend The Northman. That is not for every sensibility, but I do recommend it. By the way, Northman is on VOD now.
Awesome. Great.
So Northman is on VOD now. Just came out tonight, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that this should go down. I think that Robert Eggers has had three great movies: The Witch, Lighthouse, and The Northman. So just know that The Northman isn't exactly what you expect. But if you know what Robert Eggers is, and you've seen his other two films, this is perfectly in line with what he does. So, cool. Do highly recommend it. And I'm hopefully soon I'm going to watch X. So, because you say that you were not impressed with it, but it was pretty visually incredible.
It's well done. It's very well done. For about an hour, it seems really promising. But I mean, without spoiling anything, I mean, if you've seen Tourist Trap, if you've seen Motel Hell, you've seen X. You really have. It's very old hat.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm going to check it out. Well, listen, Professor Barry, unless you've got something else that you wanted to talk about, I say that the Hawaii Film Critics Society has done its duty for the planet for summer 2022.
I hope it's a great summer. I do. You and I are both putting all our chips on Top Gun. I certainly think it's going to be the biggest film of the summer. But, you know, of course, this is a good time to remind everyone, and certainly to remind you, Greg, that I once thought that Guardians of the Galaxy was going to be the biggest bomb of the summer of 2014 because I didn't think a movie with a talking raccoon was going to be any good. And I was wrong. I was wrong about that. And then a couple years ago, Maui Times said, you know, Barry, instead of just listing these movies, how about you do like your top 10? What do you think are going to be the biggest hits of the summer? Like, you know, 1 to 10. So my number one pick of that particular summer was a film that I thought was, of course, going to be the top grossing film of the summer, a movie called Solo, A Star Wars Adventure, which actually died in its opening weekend. So I've been wrong a lot, but I hope to be right this summer.
What I admire about you the most, Professor Barry, is you're being able to recognize your failure at picking top flight film or top box office hits. Excuse me.
Yes, I'm completely out of line with that.
It's true. Can I say this though? We don't have to talk about this forever, but I think that Solo was unfortunately a victim of The Last Jedi, and people were pretty ticked. Star Wars fans were ticked and never gave Solo a chance. And I think if they had given Solo a chance, they would have realized how good that movie actually was.
Agreed.
Do I think that Alden Ehrenreich was great as...
Alden Ehrenreich, whatever
German name that is.
Alden Heron.
He may not have been the most... I guess you could say that he may not have been the right person for that role in some respect, but I still don't think it takes away from how good that movie actually was. And I really think...
It's an impossible assignment. Yeah,
correct.
I think he was fine, but I mean, let's face it, there was one actor we all wanted in that
correct.
Role, and he wasn't going to do it.
I think this
was the next best scenario.
I have to say that for all of the failure that is Disney Star Wars and its sequels, and I could go, we could spend another hour and a half talking about the failure of the sequel trilogy. I think that the best things to come out of that of the Disney Star Wars debacle are Star Wars Rogue One and Solo.
The middle movies. I agree. Yeah, I like those middle movies too. Completely agree.
I think they're done very well. I think Rogue One does not get enough credit, and I think people actually like that movie, and I don't think it gets a lot of credit. And I certainly think that Solo is one that doesn't get any credit at all. And I think that people were very upset with the sequel trilogy and where it was going. Last Jedi took care of that, and then The Rise of Skywalker just totally screwed everybody, and they didn't like it at all. And I'm one of those guys. I say this all the time, and I'll say it again because I don't know if I've ever said it on the Hawaii Film Critics Society podcast before. I am a guy who does not like the sequel trilogy at all. I was the guy in 2015 when Force Awakens came out, and I'm the only guy that wrote a crap review for that movie, if you remember right, Professor Barry.
Yeah, I do remember that,
I wrote a crap review for that. I do not like The Rise of Skywalker. Let me tell you something. I think that the best movie out of the sequel trilogy is The Last Jedi. I think that movie was different enough, and it did something outside the norm of Star Wars that made it interesting. But that's the one everyone else hates.
There's good stuff in it. I agree. It takes chances. It's not precious about Star Wars. And
correct.
I think that's the reasons people hate about it. Right. Because the first film is very precious about Star Wars. And sometimes to its detriment.
Yep.
Sometimes the first film does feel like a fan film. I agree with you. Because I think with the second film, the things about it that I like are the moments where you go, oh, this is not what I expected at all. And I thought that was really refreshing. It was Rian Johnson, I think, who directed it.
Rian Johnson. You can't say that name in some Star Wars circles. It'll get you killed.
I know. It's
It'll
ridiculous. It's, there's great. I mean, I don't think it's a perfect film, but there's greatness in it. There is.
Yeah, it just it touched on so many subjects. I mean, who knew gravity in space? It's crazy. At the very beginning, to be fair, they touched on actual science. A ship in the Star Wars universe runs out of gas. Unbelievable. Like, I thought I would never, ever see that in a Star Wars film. So, but anyway, I can go on and on about how much I actually enjoyed The Last Jedi, and I thought it took interesting turns, and I thought that that's the best, by the way, that's the best representation of Kylo Ren. Not the first one, not the last one. The middle one is the best representation of who Kylo Ren really should have become. So, don't get me started. Anyway, I can go on and on. But, Professor Barry, other than that, yes, sir, our next venture to the movies will be Top Gun. Will you be joining us premiere night?
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay, please. Great. All right, so just know that Aaron insisted I buy the seat next to him, which I did. So make sure you get your tickets for that day. I think we went to the 3 o'clock or the 4, whatever the first one was. We're at Maui Mall because I guess that's the only place it's playing. So we're very excited. Top Gun Maverick. We haven't seen a Tom Cruise movie in quite some time. This is the first Tom Cruise movie. We're going to get a couple more next year and the year after, I believe, in Mission Impossible. But we haven't seen Tom Cruise in a summer film in since what? Since the last Mission Impossible?
You might be right.
Yeah.
It feels like it's been a lot. I mean, this thing has been delayed so many times. It feels like it's been a really long time since we last saw him.
Absolutely. So I'm going to say that Top Gun Maverick is the official start of summer. So here's to hoping that hypermasculinity and dudes being dudes is back at the movie theater, because I do feel the need. I do feel it. And
I'm going to counter the way you're feeling, and I'm going to go see Alex Garland's Men, a warning against hypermasculinity.
The irony of how much I can't wait to see Top Gun Maverick, but I also can't wait to see Men as well, because I'm such
a
huge
fan. You should see him back to back. It might just go straightened out.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, that is too funny. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back hopefully right after the summertime with our fall preview. If at all possible, maybe that night after we see the premiere of Top Gun, we may do a fresh out of the movie theater review.
That'd be fun.
That would be a lot of fun as well. We'll put that up. You can, by the way, you can get all of these podcasts courtesy of places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Make sure you check those out for the Hawaii Film Critics Society. It's under the Nerd Watch banner. So make sure you check those out under the Nerd Watch banner, and they'll be marked as Hawaii Film Critics Society. Make sure that you guys, even though the Nerd Watch hasn't been producing podcasts, they're still doing lives on Facebook. This show will be on Facebook and on YouTube, and all other formats out there on the internet. So you can check that out, and it'll be all under the Nerd Watch banner, of course. And of course, I do want to tout Professor Barry. In your professional capacity, you also do a podcast with your wife. Is that not correct?
And it's called So I Married a Film Critic. It's really funny. We watch movies together and talk about our first impressions. And oftentimes we wildly disagree. And it's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. I tell you to be a part of a podcast with me, but you do one with your wife instead. But so much for loyalty. I asked you first, by the way.
Years for years, buddy.
But no, if you have not heard, How I Married a Film Critic. So I Married a Film Critic.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have not listened to the podcast, it is a lot of fun. Professor Barry and his lovely wife, Julia, do a great job of dissecting a film from two very different perspectives. One from a perspective of the layman, and one from a pompous film critic.
That is very absolutely true. Yes.
It's pretty it's incredible.
Accurate.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's a lot of fun. I do highly recommend you guys check it out. So I Married a Film Critic is currently out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Apple
is that right?
Spotify, yeah.
Apple and Spotify. It sounds like your wife enjoys it a lot too, by the way.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun.
I'm sure that you do. So, ladies and gentlemen, please check out those podcasts. We will be back, hopefully, for the review of Top Gun Maverick. And also, we'll be back for the fall movie preview for award season and see what's coming out then as well. So, Professor Barry, it's an absolute pleasure, sir. The founder of Hawaii Film Critics Society. You guys can, of course, go. If you want to see any of the reviews, you go to HiFilmCriticsSociety.org. That's HiFilmCriticsSociety.org. That's critics with an S. My reviews are up there, and Professor Barry's reviews are up there, and that's all you need to know. No, there's a ton of other guys up there as well, from our good friend Jason David, from Aaron Medeiros, who's also an avid film watcher, and that guy is a voracious writer. Matter of fact, I don't think he I don't think he knows when to stop writing. So
I wish he would.
Of course, Myung Choi, Terry Hunter, and of course, our latest addition being Jaren.
Jaren.
I just the last name. Even though I'm Filipino, it escapes me.
It's Ogbenawag.
Ogbenawag. There it is. I told him to be on you told him to be on the podcast tonight. But hopefully, we'll have more of those guys here. They're a little camera shy, I guess, but. We'll hopefully get them on. Learn more about those guys at HiFilmCriticsSociety.org for all those reviews from all those. And it's great because there's varied film critics. So whichever fits your taste, check them out. It's fantastic. You guys will have a great time perusing and reading some very fun reviews. So that once again, it's HiFilmCriticsSociety.org. Professor Barry, the founder of Hawaii Film Critics Society. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, peace out, much love, and by all means, go watch a movie, would you?
Yeah.
We're out of time. Aloha.
Aloha.